Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very, very accomplished individual who loves to call himself an ordinary person, though I hold him in high esteem because of his knowledge, Mr. Satya Saurabh Khosla. Satya, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Asutosh. I was very hesitant coming to the show because it's Brand Called You and I'm definitely not a brand.
Okay.
But yes, I want to make everybody feel like a brand and therefore I agreed to join you.
Thank you very much. So Satya is the author of a book titled How to Prevent Recession. And then in order to make it easier for a lot of people, he wrote a second book, which is 156 questions about how to prevent a recession. Satya, based on his vast knowledge, draws upon ancient wisdom and scriptures extensively. And his lecture series offer a curriculum that fulfills the new global goal of education. It is posted on the Ministry of Education website, Swayam, and can be accessed by all. So Satya, let's start with a discussion on your books. How are you using ancient wisdom in predicting an economic activity?
First of all, I have no claim. I don't make a claim that I can predict a recession.
Okay.
In quantum physics, there is a concept that is being recognized now. That's the observer.
Mm-hmm.
Strangely, I find the same word being used in ancient wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And that observer is called a drashta. Mm-hmm. Person who observes.
Okay.
So I find that a lot of Western researchers called our mantras as mathematical formulae.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow the people who to whom the mantras, just were revealed as they never claim authorship of it.
Mm-hmm.
They say that we are mantra drashtas.
Mm-hmm.
This is why it happened.
Yeah.
What is this phenomena? So that's when I try to examine it. It's just when you are looking at a larger truth, all mm-hmm. of us are stuck in the truth of I, me, mine.
Mm-hmm.
Need based, which is good, which is necessary for daily existence. But when that need steps into boundaries of greed in a mm-hmm. manner that is harming everybody else, then it restricts your vision. You're not able to see the larger truth. And the larger truth is that maybe a recession is coming or social strife is coming or many other things are there. So that's how I see the concept of drashta, the observer. The observer can take a view which is beyond his immediate needs and mm. therefore it happens.
Very interesting. So as a drashta, when was the 2008 recession predicted?
I was extremely uncomfortable since 2004, but yes, it was predicted on October
4, 2007. I see.
The stock market started falling on October 9, 2007. October, I think, 6 and 7 or 7. Yeah, 6 and 7 were holidays. They were they were Saturday, Sunday. So there was it was almost like the top of the market.
Mm-hmm. And when a recession, I thought a recession is a series of events that take place. But you're being very precise about the date. How does that happen?
That's what I'm saying. I'm just an observer to see how the precession came about because I had been uncomfortable since 2004.
Understand.
And extremely uncomfortable about the state of things the way they were.
Okay.
But nobody was willing to publish what I'm saying or even, it wasn't clear. It's just that I'm an observer to what happened. That I was able to present the truth in a 20-25 page note, which they asked me to reduce in 1500 words.
Mm-hmm. I understand. And what did your prediction state?
My prediction stated that the misuse of derivatives
mm-hmm.
and leveraging in USA housing market will lead the global economy into a recession.
Mm-hmm.
It gave a mathematical calculation saying that when, as was being said, the interest rate is going to rise by a very minuscule amount. And mm-hmm. I had done the larger truth, the macro calculation of that. Mm-hmm. And it was very obvious to me that you know, it's going to lead to a lot of pain. And that's just, I gave that calculation and I said that in the end 2007, when this pain will become obvious to everybody.
Fascinating. And, you know, coming back to the drashta part, can you share your life experiences that led you to conclude that you are only an observer to the truth of coming to the sessions?
Okay. Let me see. See, I wrote a book, How to Prevent Recession, which you mentioned. And now, I'm just an observer to the fact that after the stock market recovered, I was working on the book. How, as you know, it's everyone says it's impossible to predict the top of a market. But on the precise date of the next high after the recession, the book was uploaded on Amazon.
Okay.
Dow, I think 19th was the date of the high of Dow, and 21st was the date of the high of S&P, and the book was uploaded on 20th, right in between, which, of course, there was some feeling in between that, yes, you know, things are not happy, and that's why I was hurrying up. But this kind of precision, I can only be an observer to it, because it's like... I don't know of any phenomena in the last, ever since the stock markets were there, I've not, whatever little I know, I've not seen this kind of thing happening. So I can't claim authorship of it. I can't say that I did it. I don't feel like saying it.
Sure.
I'd like to be honest.
Well said. Well said. So my next question is that, you know, while reading about you, while talking to you, anyone who can time the stock market, and when it'll reach its peaks, will probably become the richest person in the world. Can you share your experiences of your journey during this period?
Well, it's quite interesting, you know, and it reaffirms the fact that I'm more an observer rather than a doer. Because after the book was published, I had this deep desire that, yeah, now, you know, maybe I can do it. You know, there's always this feeling. So I wanted to, you know, forewarn people that, yeah, it's something is going to happen. That is a desire. So when you want to be a hero, that's not a great thing for your ego. So this, you know, there's a concept called the inversion of the yield curve, which predicts the stock market high, you know. So before the yield curve inverted, I made two attempts to publish my articles. Both were rejected. Both were rejected.
Okay.
The second one, and these were at precise, both these articles were at precise stock market tops. The second one, which was at the stock market top, was rejected despite the fact that I'd been invited to write it. And when they read it, what I have to write, they rejected it. So I said, my friend, you stick to, you know, because that was not going to lead to a recession. But going to foretell. So I stepped back, and when the next invitation came, it was on the exact, well, the WHO said that the corona, first unreported case of coronavirus was on, I think, December 8, 2019. And I was giving, you know, at an international management conference, I was the keynote speaker and was the chief guest. But I looked at the topic. The topic had nothing to do with the recession. So I just kept mum. I'd learned that there's no point speaking more than your brief.
Fascinating.
From earlier lessons. But I had simultaneously got an invitation from a USA-based university, which was an engineering conference discussing Industry 4.0. And I'm not an industry expert or an engineering expert. Sure. And when I asked them, what is it that you want me to speak on? They said, please speak on any topic that you want to speak on. I said, aha, this is the invitation. So the conference was timed for February end, which was a safe time to predict the recession. Because some cases had come, the conference got postponed till March 8th, you know. And 8th was, again, USA time was, I think, and. At the time, they were not really. So there's a date difference between 8 and 9. So on March 8 and 9, there's no point predicting a recession. So I just mentioned that how to prevent the coming recession, and I gave the way forward. So there was nothing grandiose about that prediction.
Okay.
It was just a statement that how can we prevent the coming recession? Because it was too late.
Fair enough. And you published your book. You've been writing so much on the recession. What was the concern academicians had of your predictions?
Well, I don't think any of them are concerned with my predictions.
Okay.
To be honest. But yes, there was a general concern among academicians after 2008 because all the decision makers who took major decisions which led to this crisis, the whole world falling on its knees financially, they were all not only educated, but highly educated.
Mm-hmm.
And that too from the best universities in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it, and that led a lot of people to ask a lot of uncomfortable questions from academicians and academics. And the most uncomfortable questions were asked about the MBA curriculum, because those were the people who took the decisions on leveraging and...
Correct. Know,
so that was
And what did you do after predicting the recession?
Okay, that's a good question. There were two alternatives. Go around to town and say that, look, buddy, I did it. Then I asked myself, is it worth it? I mean, what is the value that I'm adding to society? I said, if having come this far and having been able to do this, if there is some way that I can point out to how recessions can be prevented, maybe that will be a more lasting contribution. So I started working on this book, which you mentioned, How to Prevent Recession.
Okay. And, I should have asked you this a little earlier, but what is the hypothesis that you have worked on for this book?
See, basically, as I mentioned earlier, till you're restricted to your need, that's perfectly justified, but need stretching to greed, okay. But when your greed is impinging on other person's territories and other person's rights in a major way, that's where, things go wrong. That's the large, when you forget that you are a part of society and there's a larger impact of your human actions. So let me take a very simple example of maybe Kalidas or whatever. In every culture, there will be some example. Suppose you're sitting on the branch of a tree and now you face the trunk and you start, cutting the branch on which you're sitting. So sooner or later, the branch will fall off with you and on the heads of the people who are waiting below to take benefit of the log.
Correct.
So that is, that's nothing to do with curriculum. That is more with the mental attitude, which was the very basis of transforming, which was the very basis of our education system. And if you ask further questions on that, I'll be able to elaborate.
Very interesting. And tell me, is this approach useful for the three segments of our community? Not all segments, but three segments, which are business, academicians, and government?
Let's look at business first. Definitely, yes. When we are looking at, after the 2008 recession, the richest countries of the world, the OECD, they got together and they changed the global goal of education from prosperity to well-being. Because they made a chart, and I know you don't allow charts here, but the OECD has a chart.
No, the only reason we don't allow, but we don't have the facilities right now. But in that future date, we will certainly include your charts.
This is not my chart. This is the OECD. They made a report and they said that the last 150 years, despite the growth of education and technology, a lot of prosperity has been created during the industrial and digital revolution. But along with prosperity, a lot of social pain has been created. So how do you create progress without social pain?
Okay.
That is the challenge. So they are creating they've set 2030 as the target for creating a well-being curriculum. They have created a directorate of educational skills, which is there to prepare this curriculum.
Right.
However, I felt that 2020 needs the curriculum now. Anyway, they're coming to how it can help business. Well, we are looking at well-being as a concept. This well-being has to do with overall the way you live life.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at business. Business is all about, say, strategy. That's okay. The most important thing. I'm sure you've headed businesses, sure. And you understand that strategy. Mm. Everyone says, okay, what's your strategy? And that's so. Now, what is strategy? Strategy is a way of achieving a goal.
Correct.
So if the strategy of business emerges from the strategy of living life, it will create well-being. Because there is a conflict between the strategy of life and the strategy of business, therefore, there is social pain.
Mm.
There is dissonance within the individual and dissonance in society. Triply, what is it, if dissonance is there within you, it will sooner or later get reflected.
Fair enough.
Therefore, ancient Indian wisdom has four goals of life. They are called the four Purusharthas.
Mm-hmm.
They lead to the strategy of living life.
Right.
Your work emerges from there.
Right.
Lead to wealth. I can go on, but this is enough.
Yeah. And, you're also telling me about your hypothesis and whether the approach is beneficial to academicians as well as government.
Well, academicians have a serious opportunity and a serious challenge.
Okay.
How do they use the current curriculum, current ideas, and integrate them with concepts of ancient wisdom? When I say ancient wisdom, I'm not referring to just religion. I'm referring to concepts which are common across religions, across philosophies, which all those ideas which help make a civilization last.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we are seeing in 2020 or 2008, these are civilizational threats also. Mm-hmm. And how long can we go on like this? Those questions are being raised, and those questions, I think, deserve an answer. Okay.
Very interesting. So let's move on. And, you also spoke about the prediction for 2020. Mm-hmm. What was the 2020 prediction and what is the solution?
Well, the 2020 prediction, as I mentioned earlier, there was no time left to make a prediction, and there's no mathematical calculation.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, yes, people were not observing that actually a lot of things had been happening despite the efforts of the Fed and, the central banks globally. Mm-hmm. A lot of things were happening, and I'm sure the knowledgeable people know exactly what I'm saying, and there's no point talking of them here. The yield curve had inverted, and you know how many things are being done, the quantitative easing, and people who know, they will understand.
I understand. Absolutely. I agree with you.
To them, nothing needs to be told, and to the others, maybe it's best not to be told. But yes, all they need to be told is things are not happy.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
So if things are not happy, then we need to look at what is the solution.
Fair enough.
So the solution is there in my books.
Interesting. And the next question to you is that how was the 2008 prediction different from the one in 2020?
The challenges in 2008 and 2020 are totally different.
Okay.
The 2008, had lessons for business.
Mm-hmm.
That's my take home.
Mm-hmm.
While 2020 recession had lessons on way of living life.
Mm-hmm.
Challenge the way you are living life.
Correct.
While the earlier one only challenged business.
Correct.
So my earlier work, after 2008 was revisiting the MBA curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned, using the trying to integrate it with the ancient wisdom concept so that you get a well-being as perspective.
Mm.
While the 2020 recession means basically your ideas of living life have to emerge from a different base, which is exactly what OECD is mentioning, the World Economic Forum. They are looking at values, character, transformation of attitudes, and for transformative competencies. That we are all competent, nobody denies, but we need to transform what the competence is creating in society.
Fascinating.
So that's
very interesting. My next question before I move to the next segment is that, you have read a lot of the scriptures. You are drawing upon the knowledge of ancient wisdom, for all the work that you are doing. My question to you, for our viewers and listeners, is what lessons can we learn from the scriptures to manage recessions and ourselves in the future?
Very humbly, I say that I make no claim to predicting recessions or to having studied this.
I understand that. Yeah.
I make no claims that I'm not well. I'm not well read on the scriptures. Mm-hmm. Not. But yes, there are some common sense ideas,
mm-hmm.
which are the basis of all religions, all philosophies,
correct.
Which help make a civilization outlast.
Mm.
If those ideas can be the basis of a curriculum design,
mm-hmm.
that is what will create well-being. Because we need to transform attitudes. We are giving a lot of tools and techniques in the hands of graduating students,
mm-hmm.
like giving a knife in somebody's hand. You give it in the knife of a trained mind of a surgeon, it leads to a cure.
Mm-hmm.
If you give it to an untrained mind, maybe it leads to murder.
Mm.
So was the 2008 recession and 2020 recession, were they caused by the inability to do one simple thing?
Mm-hmm.
What is that thing? That thing is that we are not in the simple habit of speaking the truth.
Mm.
If the truth of how, what is the impact of derivatives and leveraging was revealed to all those innocent investors who had invested in USA housing, the 2008 recession would have been prevented. Correct. Agreed?
Mm.
If the truth of how very dangerous the virus is was revealed in the very first instance, do you think we would not have taken precautions? All the countries and all the leaders would not have taken precautions. So the whole, my whole contention is that there are very simple things of ancient wisdom, which we are not training our human minds to comprehend, to grasp, to practice. Therefore,
fascinating. Which means what you're really saying is, speak the truth.
Absolutely.
And if you speak the truth, then the implications of that truth can be managed much better, which may be able to prevent future disasters.
Sir, I would go a step further. Trust in society is based only if everybody is speaking the truth.
Mm.
Would you trust me if you knew that I'm a liar?
Mm. True.
You would not. So everybody doesn't know if the person standing next to him is lying or telling the truth.
Mm.
So everybody is weighing the option that is it wise to tell the truth? So what is happening? All social problems, the whole social fabric, not the economic fabric, the whole social fabric is so vitiated that you are finding all kinds of problems. Not just economic.
Correct. Correct. So Satya, I've got time for two more questions for you. And I'm trying to decide what to ask you. But, you know, after such an amazing discussion, I just have to ask you that what are some of the core values you believe in?
You said it. Speak the truth. Let's go to the next question.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. And my, then I have time for one more question, which is I want to ask you who or what inspires you?
Well, in psychology, there's a concept of self-actualization.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, what inspires me is how can human potential be actualized?
Okay.
That's what inspires me. And hopefully in trying to discover that, maybe one day I will be able to actualize my potential.
Fascinating. And my last question to you, and this is a question on failure. I've often said that parents in South Asia or Asia don't teach children it's okay to fail. We are always told come first in class, go to the head of the line, etc. And that manifests itself in our behavior patterns. You and I both live in North India, and we are used to seeing three lanes at a traffic light and nine cars because everyone has to get off first, and so on and so forth. Yet we learn, we fail, we learn. My question to you is, Satya, what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
I'll give another dimension to what you're saying.
Okay.
And I will. It'll reveal a secret of ancient wisdom.
Sure.
Ancient wisdom says, love all, serve all. I learned very, very late in life, when it was too late, that it does not say trust all.
Mm. Fascinating.
By the time I figured that out,
mm-hmm.
it's too late.
Amazing. Amazing. And you're so right. I mean, some of the biggest mistakes most people make is trusting people based on face value. Satya, on that note, thank you very much. It's been such a privilege speaking to you. Thank you for sharing so much of your knowledge and understanding. And as you say, I hope and pray that you get your self-actualization fast so that before the next prediction, you are able to predict the top. Good luck and thank you.
Thank you. And I hope everybody's self-actualization is actually part of my self-actualization. That's all I have to
say. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.